The point is, I really believe most of us, we have some sort of understanding that something is wrong or what is going on, or so we just don't tie the strings together. We just don't get it in a picture. And maybe this is the benefit of a seminar like this. Please don't mess the carpet, because they punish me. I'm part of this church, you know. I'm getting flogged afterwards. Okay, so what we do?
They're going to marry you.
But also, I mean, if you look at the word I gave you before, given, it will be given to you. You also will see that the initiative is with us, and it's not with others. But we have grown to leave the initiative with others rather than with us. And God never said that. So we use interest as a reward for those who should be punished, actually. Yeah. So that they do what they, by law, were supposed to do anyway.
Are you talking about the transfer of value of say, $100, or are you talking about the actual physical transfer of the money note that it was intended for? Because the value is obviously something else that will come in later and how it affects everything.
It involves basically both. By keeping it out, I bring the physical, nowadays not so much more the physical, but the claims on the physical I bring to the bank and say, listen, I want to keep it rather, because I actually want to do more with it than just spending it at the moment. So it's both. Today it's both. It used to be just the physical, by keeping it out. And the injustice or the illegal part comes in, because it is not mine. I'm actually not supposed to keep this physical tool, which should just exchange values. You know, if you would keep the apples for it, or the oranges, or the bricks, or whatever you buy for it, that's fine. But we tend to keep money because it is so much superior to everything else, and that creates a problem, because everything we live in our economies is built on this exchange tool, money. Does that make more sense now? So we use interest, and here we have the saver who has too much what he doesn't need. Yes.
Now I save $200.
Yes.
Now I save $200. At the end of the day, I'm going to still use that $200. Now I save, and I started with $100. So this one means that I still have $200.
Well, bear with me a little bit. I think it's going to be unfolding here for you what's really happening. At the moment, we just look in this small circle of the $100, but it will unfold. If the question is not answered, please remind me, okay? So here's the saver. He has a stack of money which he doesn't use. So he brings it to the bank next door, you know, and makes a deposit and puts it into his savings account. Now the bank doesn't really need the money, right? I mean, what can they do with money? Burn it, use it as toilet paper, or what? So what they do is they say, listen, if you pay me something, I find somebody who needs the money and who pays something for you as well. So that's what we do. So we empower the bank to do something which we don't want to do. So the bank finds somebody in the economy who needs the money, so that the money keeps on circulating, you know. But they say you have to pay for it. And because they are brainwashed, they say, okay, it's a fair deal. I don't have it, I need it. If I get it now, I pay you more back. Are you still with me? So they pay interest. All of a sudden, the money you gave away without even work to it becomes more money. Now, if you give this notebook for somebody to use for a year and you get it back, what do you get back? It's a used one, right? So is the value the same like it was the year before? Is the value? Higher or more?
Less.
But if you give money away, you get what? You get more back. Doesn't make sense, does it? Understand? You need to think the money is just an exchange. You could have given products for it. If you give the product and you get it back after a year, they rot or deteriorate. They lose value. But because nobody just gives products, he gives the equivalent in money, which is just an exchange medium, he all of a sudden gets more back. Doesn't make sense, does it? But this is what we do. And so the bank passes some of the interest which it gets on, not all, but some on, to the one who gave the money. Interest is an income for doing nothing and needs to be earned by those who work hard. It is an advantage for those who have too much and a disadvantage for those who have too little and need to borrow. That's what interest is. Aristotle said money was established for exchange. But interest causes it to reproduce by itself. Therefore, this way of earning money is greatly in conflict with the natural law. Who established the natural laws? God. And here's what I said. It's schizophrenic, isn't it? If you lend things, they lead to wear, this leads to wear and tear, resulting in decreased value. But lending money leads to interest income, resulting in more money and value. And it's even true, you know, the other day we had a discussion because of even if you give stuff away, you can ask rent in order to compensate, etc., which is not really true, because usually you just get the value you lose. But with interest, you do not only get the value you lose, you also get a benefit on top to let go. And we will see that when I split up a little bit what the banks charge the people. So interest is highly unjust. Here's an example how it works with simple interest. Simple or linear, which is hardly used anymore nowadays, but here's how it works. The principal is called what you put into a savings account, for instance. The initial amount is called the principal. And then you get an interest on it, and in a simple or linear interest, the interest is always calculated on the principal, on the initial money you put into the account. That leads, after a year, at 6%, for instance, to 600 Rand. After 16.7 years, you have accumulated 10,000 Rand in interest. After 30 years, you can read it for yourself. This is something you could say, well, somehow it even makes sense. Somehow. Although it's still a lot of money for not working, isn't it? But anyway, that's how basically the interest works, the simple interest. But as I said, we hardly use it anymore. What we use is something much better, the so-called compounded brother of interest, which, as you can see on the little picture here, leads to much better results. We still have the saver, you know, who puts his money into the bank or his claim on money. The bank needs to give the claim or the equivalent into the economy. They have to pay, and because it goes like a circle constantly, or like an eight, a fallen eight constantly around, the left hand side gets more and more money and the right hand side less and less. Unless. So, as I said, compound interest delivers much more efficient results. It is the interest that is calculated on the principal and the already accrued interest combined. In other words, the interest amount starts to grow significantly. And here's how it looks. Here's a little comparison. Let's keep with the 10,000 and the 6%. Here's the comparison after 1 year, for both simple and compound interest, no change, no difference. But with year number 2, everything changes. And by year number 17 or 16.7, where we have doubled the principal with simple interest, we have already more than doubled with a compound interest. And after 30 years, it looks like this. And after 40 years, it looks like that. And after 50 years, it looks like this. In other words, after 50 years, a simple 10,000 Rand at an interest rate of 6% has created 184,200 Rand. And this is what happened. Now, somebody has to work for this money, because the one who gets it wants it. Now, who is going to work for it? And who borrows? So, because they have no money, they now get punished and have to pay not only what they borrowed, because they don't have, they have to pay on top of it even much more, which creates a huge problem. Because somewhere the money has to come from. Money does not fly out of heaven. Oh, this is very interesting. You know, you could say, well, you know, I don't have any debt, so I don't pay interest, which is not true, because interest is paid by every citizen. Most of it is indirectly. Studies have shown that depending on the capital employed, the capital which is needed in order to buy equipment, etc., for companies or for service providers or whatever, depending on how much capital is employed, the prices you pay are 10 to 80% just interest. So in other words, if interest wouldn't exist, you could afford things you only can dream of at the moment. So there we go. But we are clever people. That's why we don't listen to this. I had a chat with Eric here in the break, and he said, well, no, everything is clear. And I said, well, yeah, if everything is clear to you, it's because God has taken the veil away. If I would tell the same story to Trevor Manuel, he would say, I'm a liar. That's why with all his good intentions and the good work he's doing, you still have to question whether it's the right thing he's doing. Our president would say, I'm nuts. Most of the leaders in any capacity in the world, in business, and what have you, they don't understand what you start understanding or what you understood before. They don't. Because the Holy Spirit hasn't taken the simple little spiritual veil away. At the moment, we still speak logic, mathematical logic, that's all. And yet, it needs the Spirit to understand this logic. I mean, in such a way that it's goes down here and says, listen, something has to change. This is unrighteous. Now, here's a little calculation I did. I was inspired by somebody else who did it in Germany 10 years ago or 15 years ago. I'm not sure. He did it with Deutschmark. The Deutschmark don't exist anymore, so I did it with US dollars. The interesting task was, how much interest do you get if you put at the birth of Jesus one US dollar on an interest-bearing account? How much interest does it bring to you today? So I did a little calculation, because with these nice little tools you can do that easily, quickly. But the numbers were so big, so I had to convert it into solid gold. Okay? And I took the gold price last year. It was last year, I think it was around 370 US dollars. Today it's 540 per fine ounce. But anyway, I did it on last year, so today it's probably a little bit less, but it doesn't matter. It's still a very interesting view. Here we have 1% interest, 2, 3, 4, and 5, just in comparison to see what happens. So at the year 0, you put $1 on the account. And in the year 15 or 7, with just 1% interest, you already own 2.4 tons of gold, solid gold. Or 2% interest is 685,000 tons. You can see for yourself, and at 5%, only 5%, something which is even considered low today, you already have gained, after 1,507 years, one ball of the earth weight in pure solid gold. Now, where is it coming from? Where's this gold coming from? Tell me. Yeah, but you know, if you have just for one person who put $1 on an account, gets after 1,570 years one ball of the earth weight of gold.
That's why God only gave us the last 90 years.
Let's see, 1875, was that a significant year? I don't know. But even with the 4% interest, you already have your earth ball of gold. Now, in 2005, even 1% leads to 35 tons of gold. It's quite a lot. Or 35 billion balls of the earth weight at 5% interest. Now, where do you get it from? You tell me.
If I knew, I wouldn't tell you.
But you see, this is the system we utilize. Now, you can say nobody puts a dollar on an account and waits for 2,005 years because we only live 100 years. Or 80 or 60. But no, it's not true. Yes, we only live that long, but we put much more money on an account which excels the interest much quicker. So we do the same with different ingredients and destroy ourselves, and we don't even know it. We think we do the right thing. Now, here's what would happen with simple interest. That's all. So with simple interest, which means 5% on one US dollar every year, you would just gain after 2005 years 101.25 US dollars more. There's a slight difference between simple interest and compound interest, as you can detect. Are you with me? Our friends there in the back, are you with me? I know it's inspiring, I know. You see? Here's what Professor Dr. Margaret Kennedy, one of the two guys, or ladies, she's a lady, not a guy, sorry, I'm in contact with, is saying. She is traveling quite extensively in the world and teaching on currencies and monetary system, etc. And she's saying, listen, money not only makes the world go around, but it also wrecks the world in its process. And if you look at this picture, she used the old picture done by another German, and she said, is there better proof than that money is wrecking the whole world? And this is true. That's what we have empowered money to do. Compound interest is a hidden redistribution mechanism that constantly shovels money from those who have less than they need, shovels from those who have less than they need to those who have more than they need. It's like a suction mechanism, and you can't even do anything. Even if you want to avoid it, it's impossible. The pure arithmetic makes it a suction mechanism. I don't know to whom I talked here in the break, but it's even those guys who are rich, even if they want to spend quickly so that they don't get that money, they cannot spend fast enough, then the money is coming back through interest. They have no chance. Mathematically, it's impossible. You cannot alleviate the problems of those who have problems anyway with this system. Yes?
In die wat het so meer kry, wat is my versie?
No, this has nothing to do with this. It sounds like, but it is not related to the financial realm. It can talk about material things, but if you don't do what you're supposed to be doing with it based on God's word and principles, then he's going to take it away and give it to somebody who has already more. So it can talk about money, but it talks about much more than just this.
And you know what the actual interesting thing is, all the people I talk to, and I use the example myself even, but we were talking about the big lotto win in the UK now, which is 100 and something million, and we always use the example, and the actual method we will follow is, if you can win that money, you must, and you can just get it in the bank, the interest you will bear will be so and so much, and you can live off of that. So it shows you how we even teach ourselves that let's do it this interest method because it's the best way to go. So that it is something that is ingrained in most people's minds, that try and get interest as far as you can.
That's why I asked you the question. That's why I asked you the question in the beginning: whom do you serve?
Okay, I don't want to talk to you anymore.
Here's what the president of Nigeria said, who, as far as I know, is a Christian. Well, I can take a punch. This, by the way, is something I had to learn. It's part of my process where I had to learn to ask my pastor. Every now and then I feel attacked. But I need to learn that I'm just bringing God's truth across. So even if you make remarks or if you say something like this, derogatory or so. Now, this was just a joke. But just to use it, I need to learn that it's against God. It's not against me.
It is a compliment because you're stirring up the...
I'm stirring up the hornets now. But it had nothing to do with your comment now. Don't misunderstand me. But here's what Obazanya said. He said, you know, that we borrowed up to 1985 or 1986 was around $5 billion. And we have paid around $16 billion. Now, this is 15 years later. The $5 billion they borrowed, they have already paid $16 billion on it. Yet we are still being told that we owe about $28 billion. You see, we work with bigger amounts, shorter period, with the same effect. And so he says, if you ask me what is the worst thing in the world, I say it's the compound interest. Actually, it's the interest rates of the rich nations. Yeah, they just don't know it. That's why I'm even asking here, where's this money coming from? Oops. That's why we sing Amazing Grace. Because nobody else but God can get us out there. Now let's talk a little bit about banks. Because banks are usually perceived as the bad guys. Right? Wrong. No, right. Or what? Now, how do you perceive a bank? Come, tell me. How do you see a bank? That's what they do. What else do they do?
Essential to the economy.
Essential. This is a more qualified statement. I'm not sure whether it's true, though.
They control the process.
They control the process.
A lot of banks are regarded as a source. And we had asked personally, all the banks in the world had to disappear. What would you do?
You know, we had interesting discussions here with the last group. Do we need a bank?
No.
You see, and we have grown up so much so that everybody's sure, we need a bank. But the truth is, you don't. But let's start at the beginning, okay? And maybe we make a different decision afterwards. So we have two types of banks, basically. We have the issuing banks, which evolved because we start at the beginning. They evolved with... we call them central banks or federal banks. It depends on the country. Here it's the central bank. In the United States, it's the federal bank. But these banks basically have the prime responsibility of assuring the stability of the national currency. In other words, to make sure that one rand is one rand every day, which they can't. And the other one is to supply the economy with money and to regulate interest rates, which they can't do anymore as well. So these banks basically can't do the job anymore, factually, because every power they had in the beginning is taken away from them through the economy. We'll come to that. So these are toothless tigers, and yet they are still there. And then we have what we call the business banks or commercial banks. It's not, by the way, Pick and Pay who allows you to pay with your card there because they have an agreement with NetBank or so. Pick and Pay is not a bank. It's just companies, they they grab hold of opportunities to make you spend more with them. That's it. So they facilitate banking jobs, but they are not banks. Okay? So when we talk about business banks or commercial banks, we talk about those who really administer our funds, facilitate what we call cashless account settlements, you know, the credit items, shift them from one ledger to the next one and things like that, or mediate between lender and borrower, saver and debtor. That's all they do. We would not need a bank if we wouldn't carry our money to them.
But you know what?
No, I don't.
Everywhere or society expects you to have a bank. When you apply for a job anywhere, one of the things that you've got to have before you can get a job is you've got to have a bank account.
Yeah, but you only get a bank account if you have an ID, but you don't even get an ID. So what do you need a bank account for? No, I'm sarcastic now. Sorry. I know. But just because the system is like this doesn't mean it's right. Right? That's the question. And that's the question we have to find out and answer. But first we need to understand the system. We're still busy.
If we didn't have a bank, we would be forced to live a lot poorer than we do.
Which I will prove to you that it is wrong. I will prove it to you. That's a perception. That's a lie we believe. Now, our Creator, who has established virtually everything which revolves around our lives, He says, give, and it will be given. And you know the second part of this verse? A good measure, pressed down, shaken together. If it's true what you say, he would be a liar. But because we don't believe it, we have made us believe that the opposite is the truth. You understand? It appears to be the truth, but it's not. But I'm going too much ahead. But I see you guys are thinking here, right? So here's what happens with the banks. The commercial banks, the business banks, they get interest, and we think they get lots of money, but it's not true, because this interest they get from us when we borrow money, they have to divide up in two different portions. The one is the portion of interest they pass on to the one who gave the money, and the other one is the portion they need for themselves for various reasons. Now the portion they give to the one who gave the money basically comprises of what they call the basic interest. This is the interest where you are willing to let go of the money you otherwise would keep for yourself. Then the so-called scarcity surcharge, whatever they mean with that, which mostly only applies here in nations like in Africa. I don't know what they use it for, but because, you know, you need to make sure that enough of the cash is floating around somehow, I don't know. But anyway, it's passed on. In most banks it's zero anyway, as you can see. But then they have what they call the effective real interest of saver, but they add to it a so-called inflation surcharge. But because everybody who gives his money for somebody else to use says, I do not want to lose out with inflation. If a rand is only 90 cents in a year's time, I still want to get back my rand plus interest. So they have to put an inflation surcharge on it to make sure that the guy who gives the money or the lady who gives the money is still willing to give it. Otherwise, they wouldn't give it anymore. So this is what they pass on. What they keep is, apart from their cost for personnel and building and equipment and what have you, and a little profit margin. Yeah. It's not much compared to companies. But the problem arises with the turnover. And the turnover is what I showed you in the other picture with the circulation. You can use the same 10 rand or 100 rand or whatever note and circulate it 100 times through the bank, it's still just the 10 or the 100 rand which circulates, but the turnover of the bank is increasing, and with every increase they get money. So with something which is unreal, they get something which is kind of real. Now, of course, the whole interest rates, they depend on how high the amount is you either save or borrow, on how long terms, what are the securities, etc., etc. And basically, you can say the higher the amount, the longer the term, the higher the securities, the less the bank margin is. The less risk they have, the less they have to cover, because as you can see, part of their cost is what they call credit risk. This is why we have such a high interest rate in South Africa compared to developed nations, because people don't pay the money back they borrow, which is a credit risk. And those who pay, they have to pay for it. That's why it's shooting up, where it should be down here because of the problems, but we are getting punished double. Anyway, and then the interest which they pass on to the savers, the shorter the period is they give the money to you to utilize for something else, the less interest you get. You know that, no? If they force you to give your money for 10 years or so, they promise you the world. And if you just give it for a month, you get peanuts. So there's a difference. And both of it together basically makes up the credit interest. Now here's a little comparison between Germany, the seventh largest economy in the world, or the second richest, and South Africa, number 23, but number one on the continent, or number two on the continent, I think. You see, the mortgage, for instance, in Germany at the moment is 4%, the lowest ever in 50 years. In South Africa, we have the lowest as well, but on 10.5%. Now, if you imagine, if you just think logically, here the people need much more to borrow money in order to pay for a house than in the rich West, but they have to pay more for it, so they get punished. Are you with me? Sorry?
Zimbabwe is 400%.
Yeah, Zimbabwe is out of control anyway. In poorer nations, people are much more dependent, logically, worldly speaking, on borrowing money, because they are poorer than the rich people in the West. But here they get punished by borrowing for their need, higher interest rate. Overdraft, short-term credit, in Germany, depending on the banks and institutions, between 6 and 11.5%, here between 16 and 19. And private savings and fixed-term deposits, in Germany, you just get 0.2 to 3%, and not much more here. So if it comes to dishing out to the people, they pay as little as in the rich nations. When it comes to taking from the poor people, they take more than the rich nations. It's a little bit schizophrenic, but we brought it on ourselves with our attitudes and everything. They are not Skellum. You know, we blame the banks, but we are the problem. If we would be righteous, if we, for instance, would pay our debt rather than forfeiting it or so, they wouldn't have to raise the risk percentage, for instance. Yes.
Say, for instance, you buy a house in Germany. The houses cost a lot more there because there's not a lot of houses there. And say, for instance, you buy a house in South Africa or in a township, you're going to get it almost for free. Doesn't that...
Now, you need to see the balance. You see, in Germany, the average income is 2,000, 2,500 euros, which is something like 20,000 rand. Here the average income is between 4 and 5. So, you know, this is often what people feel and say, listen, the people have more money. No, in relation it's similar. We have a few problems here in South Africa. We pay the same for living cost, for food, like they do in Germany. There's no difference, but they have more money than we have. But when it comes to investments, etc., it's a different story. But cars, on the other hand, in Germany are cheaper than here. Here a car is more worth than a house. In Germany, a house is multiple times the value of a car. So things go out of hand here. But the problem are not the banks. That's what I want to say. The problem is us. If we would not borrow, banks wouldn't exist in this business. If we would not bring our money to the banks, banks wouldn't have to facilitate it. That's as simple as that. Even if we wouldn't just borrow and just let them facilitate our cashless transactions and pay a little bit for it, they would not be rich. They would not be exploitation agents like we perceive them to be. Now, having said that, these banks, because they are in the same system, they become exploitation agents simply because they entice us into something we should not do. And here comes our famous ad. You know, it sounds like a bad joke that a South African bank group, I shouldn't use the name, tries to market the picture of being every customer's beginning. Yes, it is the customer's beginning, but it's also the end, the destruction. And that's what they don't say. They say they are the heritage, the journey, friend, security, music, long winding road ahead, reward, true northern light, world, answer, achievement, reward, dream and fulfillment, having nothing else but their clientele's well-being at heart. I can't believe that people fall for it. It's just unbelievable. But if you don't understand how it works, you believe it. And you know, because these banks are part of a system that needs to grow, and we will come to that just now, they have to make you borrow. And that's why they make it so easy that you even find ads like this. Thanks to national savings, my family is now doing great. My parents needed a loan in a hurry. You know, you needed a loan in a hurry. God never works in a hurry. But we in a hurry. We needed in a hurry, you know. And we were fixed up, and this is a literal quote from the newspaper. We were fixed up immediately. That's what they say. You know, I don't know what a credit record is, this little boy says. But my mom said they didn't care. This is a problem. You know what a credit rating is? You know what it is? Who doesn't? It says this is schizophrenic. If you have never borrowed, you don't get a credit because you don't have a credit rating. But if you have borrowed and you were a crook, you get a credit rating. So you can borrow again. Anyway, but they didn't care. They just gave it. And their loan was completely free for the first 3 months. Another lie. There's nothing for free. What is free for 3 months will be paid afterwards in higher rates. It's just like that 2 weeks before the sale, they raise the prices and then they drop them by 25% and sell you the same stuff to the same price before. And then they say, no payments or costs for 3 whole months. They were happy, so I guess it must be good. You see, this is how easy it is nowadays. And recently I heard even, they don't check you anymore. There are banks now, they just have you to come and that's it. And you can do whatever you want, whether you have records or not, they fix you up. They have to. But it's you who decides, not the banks.
But if you take it this way, previously, I had to go to a bank to ask for a credit card. These days, they phone you and beg you to come and just want for free.
Yes. And even with the loans, I don't know whether I have the quote somewhere. There was a time where it was really looked bad down upon if you had a debt.
Yeah.
Nowadays, if you don't have a debt, they crucify you.
The saying is, you use the bank's money to do business.
Let's talk about a few other ingredients because I really need to get these problems arising from the whole system back to you. Let's quickly talk about inflation. Now, inflation means that the amount of money brought into circulation by the central bank is inflated, is too high, is too big compared to the amount of products and services produced by the economy. In other words, there's more money than what you produce. This has two effects. Number one, the purchasing power of money in circulation decreases compared to what is produced. And number two, I explain it to you now, compared to the money in circulation, the general price level will rise. Now here is, you have an economy producing 1 million, and now you dish out 1.5 million in notes. All of a sudden, the price level goes up, but the value of the money goes down, right? Because now, you know, what you paid for 100, you have to pay 150 now. But what was worth 100 is only worth now 75. That's how easy it is. Now, inflation is not a product of the economy. That's a big lie. And this is where even our finance minister gets it wrong. Inflation is a decision made by the government. Because nobody else but the central bank can issue money. And the bank only does it usually by interference or by decision of the government. They are supposed to be independent, but nowadays there's hardly anyone independent anymore, except, and I'll tell you the except later. So inflation, what we have perceived as an inflation created by the economy, is a pure lie. Inflation is always a result of government policy and a deliberate act. Inflation always punishes the ordinary citizen, the poor and disadvantaged, and therefore increases their problems. Because everybody who is in business, who has a business, who sells products or services, or who has a means of taxation or charging somebody else, passes inflation on. But the end customer can't. That's why even when they put up 40 rand more for the pensioners per month, I say it's a disgrace, because it's eaten up by inflation, just like that. The money is value, it's little, and the prices go up at the same time, so effectively the pensioners have less than they used to have last year. So you need to know what these people are saying, you need to know what's happening really, so that you can decide, is it the right course to defend, or do we need to do something? Inflation only benefits the rich. Few realize, and this is what Margaret Kennedy again said, realize that inflation is just another form of taxation through which governments are somewhat overcome the worst problems of increasing debt. Obviously, the larger the gap between income and debt, the higher the inflation needed. Allowing the central banks to print money enables government to reduce their debt. That's what they do. Because governments have large debts as well, somebody has to pay for it. You can't get everything via taxes. That's why I showed you only 50% of the whole budget is covered by taxes. So the other stuff needs to come from somewhere. One of the means is inflation, because it reduces their own debt. It's a taxation tool. If you haven't learned that, now take it home with you. And don't believe it's a means or it's a result of economic activity. It's rubbish. There is no other way but through inflation that so few people can become so rich and so much poor in such a short period of time. And this is what a former president of the Swiss National Bank said. There are a few good guys around who really understand money in our system, even as non-Christians.
So, why does inflation benefit the rich?
Because while the poor lose the money value, for instance, you get 1,000 rand, and all of a sudden through inflation it's only valid 950, so you can buy less. But the one who had 10,000 rand and gets 9,500, if he gives what he has too much, further away he lets the other 500, which he loses out, being recovered through interest rates and what have you, and inflation surcharges. They always demand the loss through inflation, the value loss, back. So they get, at the same token, even richer. Not only do they get, then let's say they lent out 5,000, They don't only get the 5,000 back, but they get back a surcharge for inflation loss, 250 rand, if we keep the example, and they get a interest on it. So while the others get poor, and even poorer with paying interest and suffering inflation, they recover it from those who have too little anyway. You understand? The gap is widening. Does it make sense?
What I suggest really is that another bigger reason is that the rich usually have assets and have a debt for which they bought the assets. So now when they pay back their debt, they're paying with depreciated money to what they when they borrowed it, but their assets are going up because of the inflation.
It's part of the deal, but it's not 100% true. But we come to that. It's
because I would also say that the if we're talking purely in terms of giving away and receiving back an inflationary amount, the rich are not in real terms becoming richer. They're just becoming less poor than the poorer. Because the inflation that they are being paid back, the inflation portion is still less than the actual inflation.
No.
If you know what I mean.
No, it's not. It's delayed, but it's not less. They recover. It's, you know, when you have an inflation, they say we have here 4.2%. You probably don't immediately get it into the interest rates, the 4.2%. So you only get it delayed with a year or so, but they recover. It's not entirely true. It's a wrong perception. But let's see. We come to the whole asset issue as well, because ultimately we are all just basically indebted. It's only a few who really.
If there weren't interest, then it will be a level field, basically.
We talk about this. Deflation is the other side. It's basically the reduction of general economic activity due to low interest rates. Entrepreneurs and capital owners are reluctant to invest or give the money because they wait for higher rates and more promising returns on investment. They say it doesn't really pay, so I don't give it. So they keep it back, which means it's not into circulation, so there's no activity. The activity goes down and even increases the problems. Consumers buy less because they wait now for increasingly dropping prices because they don't have the money anymore. Deflation results in the supply of products and services that is not covered by demand because people don't have money, they don't want to buy. But the products are there, so they need to get out. So the consequence is higher unemployment because we don't need to produce that much anymore. We need to lay off people. Sinking price level because now we even sell low price to rather recover some kind of cost. Usually they look that they at least recover the so-called fixed cost. And resulting in a real crisis, deflation nurtures itself. That's why governments do anything in order to avoid a deflation. They rather have an inflation. They rather throw money on the market than doing something different. Falling demand leads to falling price levels until prices drop even below financing costs. Now this creates a problem because in turn it leads to liquidation of businesses that become unprofitable. You need to know that many businesses, they have borrowed in order to invest so that they can produce. Now they don't get the price in order to pay back what they borrowed. So they need to close down and sell the assets. The assets are now less value than they used. Now the banks try to get them sold again. But because nobody will buy because of the little activity, they need to sell them even further under price just in order to recover some of the cost. The attempt of banks to sell those assets, yeah, that's what I'm saying here. So we wind ourselves up. Basically, if you have a deflation, you kill yourself. That's it. And it's all related to finances.
Okay, sorry.
Interest. Sorry.
Is there an optimum inflation level?
Zero.
From a government's perspective? Because you want to...
The government will always make sure that inflation is above zero.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, you've been in the financial circles. Is there an optimum level that governments pursue? Because obviously above a certain level, it starts to...
Depends on the countries. You know, you have something like 1.5 to 3% maybe in the Western world. Here in Africa, I mean, South Africa is probably an exception with 4.2%, but you often have around 5, 6, 7%. Something they say, well, this, we shouldn't go above this. But inflation is a pure deception. The real good level is zero. But in order to get zero, it requires a few things. It requires a different financial system, for instance, a different attitude of the people of how to handle. But we will talk about all this. This is man-made problems. And we really talk about the problems now. Sorry that I rush now a little bit. But I think this is important now. Here's number one, the one I mentioned already. Governments undermining their own justice system. Compound interest not only creates an impetus, which means a driving force for pathological, which means compulsive or chronic economic growth, it also works against the constitutional rights of the individual in most countries. If the constitution guarantees every citizen equal access to government services, and money may be defined as such, then it is illegal to have a system in which a small minority continually receive more of that service than they pay for at the expense of the vast majority of the people who receive less than they pay for. Now, this is not my idea. This is something which is figured out and found out by a very bright brain, a German professor of constitutional law who died 15 years ago, sadly, not 10 years ago. But bright guys like these, they even could take the government to court.
What are they saying?
What they say is basically the government, by not enabling the people to get money easily, more easily through circulation, but to even pay for it if they get something, they deprive the majority of the population of their basic right to utilize the government given exchange tool, money. Because you cannot afford this exchange tool, because you cannot pay the high interest, your income doesn't give it, support it, because you cannot pay it, they deprive you of your right to utilize government given tools for exchange purposes. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's what he's saying. So basically the government, by not doing anything, basically erodes their own justice system. How can you ask your population to be a just people if the leaders are unrighteous themselves? So instead of our unions, you know, taking, I don't know, companies at the forefront and to court, and I don't know what, over too small wages and what have you, they should actually take the governments to court. By the way, here's what we do. Pick and pay. Quickly. They had a strike last year. You know that? 11 days, no work. Because instead of receiving the 315 rand which pick and pay offered on average an increase per month, they wanted 300 and now they wanted 400. So for 85 rand they went on strike for 11 days, working days. They lost 1,800 rand for these 11 days which they didn't work, and they settled for 325 rand. So now they need to work for 10 years with the increased wage in order to recover what they lost in 11 working days. And the unions stand there and say, listen, we defend the rights. And the workers don't know that they are now even deprived of more. They are screwed. You see?
It goes even further, because the 10 rand they got, they get taxed on for a start.
And the inflation.
And the other thing, and they get...
Oh. And they pay the union.
And you see?
I know.
If you don't understand it, you think, wow! So you need to understand what's going on. Otherwise, how will you understand when God is saying you cannot serve both God and money? You think you serve God, and yet you serve money. You just don't know it.